I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome back to All Out of Bubblegum, the podcast. Today we are going to be talking about the 1972 Michael Winner film, Chato's Land. With us, Marty and Brandon.
Hello.
Hello.
And Brandon, you can already saw that you did not care for this one that much. So we won't be talking to you.
Okay.
Marty, how you doing?
I don't want to talk about it anyway.
But I think that it's a pretty superb thriller. It's definitely a precedent for like that First Blood, Predator style, Aliens style. Men go on a mission and get picked apart because they completely underestimate their enemy. And, you know, you can see it as a Vietnam allegory, of course. But I think that it works wonders. It's very atmospheric. It's very well shot. It's surprisingly well shot considering it's done by Michael. This could use another rape scene winner. I think that it is one of the few movies that utilizes Bronson really well by almost underutilizing him. They have him speak very sparsely and he just gets to show off his muscles and be awesome. And he's less of a character even in this than he is an ethereal force of nature. And I think that's cool. The only issue is obviously they have to have this scene like 45 minutes in where you realize, oh, he's like a family man and stuff. And I think they do that just so Michael Winner can squeeze in a rape scene.
That's true.
I was going to say, yeah. Though maybe the most narratively functional rape scene he's ever done.
Possibly.
And it happens off screen too. Wow.
Yeah, but it's also like, as with most of his rape scenes, that it's just like unnecessary because it's already about a guy who's sort of been like, oh, he defended himself at the beginning of the movie. And that's why everybody's after him. Because he's just, you know, it's just racism.
Yes.
So they're like, okay, we don't need like to put a revenge angle on this too. It's like at any point originally, these guys could have just left him alone.
Yeah.
But they're just dead set on this like nihilistic chase. And so I think the rape muddies the waters a little bit.
Yeah, but I also think that Bronson's character is not the main character, not the main focus. The focus is more on the group and their dynamic, and the rape is something that divides them and really starts to widen the crack in the group.
Yeah, that is sort of there, and that definitely magnifies the fractions within their little group. It's interesting in the beginning of the movie when it goes from, oh, we're making a posse and we're going to go after this Indian to, like, that's how it starts. And then as they collect people, other people start going, I don't really want to go. And it's I think that's a very interesting part of the movie because I've seen a lot of these Westerns where they're like, we're getting a posse together. And everyone's like, yay. And they keep joining up. And this is one of the first movies I watched where, like, oh, actually, not everybody's down for this. A lot of people were like, no, I didn't like the guy anyways that the Indian killed. We didn't like him.
Yeah. And even the one guy that...
coming along.
The one guy that does join, he was just like, yeah, but we're new here. We need to... Almost like, yeah, we need to make friends.
Yeah. Gavin, I can't tell if he's British or Irish. His wife seems very Irish.
You mean the Scotsman?
So, is that what he is? Is he Scottish?
I genuinely don't remember any of the names except Earl.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because that's our good friend from Gettysburg, Richard Jordan.
Oh, yes.
So, who stole Gettysburg away because he's absolutely fantastic in that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, in this, he's just like the Michael Winner insert character.
Oh,
the Mary Sue.
Or Earl is just like, oh, no, he just wants to chase women and hurt people. Yeah, that's Michael. That's the Michael Winner insert character. Yeah.
he gets introduced trying to rape his own sister.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, and she's you know, she's shouting about it, but then she seems like, ah, it's all good fun too. Because that's how Michael Winner views it.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, one of the problems I had with this film is the posse members, with the exception of Jack Palance, who's always fantastic, I just didn't give a shit about any of them. They all kind of blended together for the most part, and I just didn't care about them. They felt boring to me. The dialogue they spotted was boring. At least Charles Bronson doesn't have to say anything. He just looks jacked as hell the entire time. But the posse members, as opposed to something like Predator or a different Men on a Mission film, I didn't give a shit about any of these guys.
What did you think then of Jack Palance and his Captain Ahab type character?
Well, I thought it was a choice to make like the ex-Confederate character sympathetic, but no, I guess it's Michael Winner, so what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But I thought he kind of had this kind of interesting balancing act between, you know, portraying this like evil ex-Confederate, but also making him a sympathetic character who wants to like not go insane as opposed to some of these other freaks who are in the posse. But in the end, I just didn't care.
To me, it was more about capturing glory that he never really got from the war.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you're right. That's true. Because, you know, the Confederacy lost, obviously. And he's kind of, you know, reminiscing about the Battle of Gettysburg at one point and that kind of thing. But, yeah.
He's like Gary Busey in Rough Riders.
Less interesting version.
He was this close to calling Chato a Yankee.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought they were at one point, but they're calling it Yaki, like the Native American tribe. And I was like, are they saying Yaki or Yankee? I can't tell.
Maybe that was deliberate.
Maybe.
It's hard to say. I do think this movie has layers to it like that, especially if they are going for a Vietnam allegory. But it's hard to say, because at the point that this would have been made, which is like 71, 72, they weren't really that deep in where it was like, oh, this is obviously not going to go well for us, that kind of thing in the war. Yeah. Where, you know, by 75, it was over. Clear that it had been a disaster.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say.
Yeah, people read a lot of Vietnam War allegories into a lot of these films from this time period. You know, you have Ulzana's Raid with Burt Lancaster. People say that's a Vietnam allegory. Then you can even go back to 1966 with the Sand Pebbles, and people are like, oh, it's a Vietnam allegory. And that's, I'm not sure about that, but.
Well, I would say that Predator and Aliens definitely are.
Yeah.
But this, I don't know, it's up in the air, because it's hard to say when you're talking about media that came out while the war was going on.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. But yeah, the brief synopsis is, as you may have guessed, Charles Bronson, the movie just starts up like mid-scene. He's just already at the bar getting harassed by a sheriff. Sheriff draws a gun on him, and Bronson swings around and kills him, flees the scene, and the movie just starts right up. They're like, nope, now we got to get a posse up and chase after this Indian who killed the sheriff.
Yeah.
But he did not kill the deputy.
Yeah, and they keep calling him Breed, and the subtitles, the Dutch subtitles, translated it as half-breed. I don't know.
Well, that's the understood meaning.
Okay.
I think there's... Michael Winner seems to be aware that people are going to go, that guy's not full Indian by any means. So they're just saying he's half-breed. So, because Charles Bronson is one of those actors, he has an interesting face. So he can kind of play almost any ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where you're like, yeah, maybe. No matter what he is. And he'd played Native Americans before.
Yeah.
So I guess they're just like, yeah, but he's not... Somebody's going to go, well, he doesn't look like a full Indian.
Yeah.
So they're like, yeah, he's like, I don't know, quarter breed, half breed, something.
It's like if an Indian made love to a brick wall, that's what he
did. You're not lying.
You're like, oh, he's got like the good features of Native Americans, but he's also clearly not fully human.
Yeah.
Charles Bronson is one of the most interesting-looking lead actors of all time.
Oh, yeah.
One of the others is actually Jack Palance, so it's very funny to see them both in a movie together. But, especially in this movie, when Charles Bronson has this, like, he has this like, sort of impassive, like, stare. that he can do, and he does it a lot, in his, especially in Michael Winner films. And in this one, it's used to sort of emphasize this kind of stoic Native American archetype. And I think that Bronson is sort of like perfect for that, because you can just see somebody screaming in pain and see him looking at you like he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's him. Just no empathy behind those eyes.
Yeah, I had something similar. Recently, we talked about The Wind and the Lion and Sean Connery playing a Berber in that one.
Yeah.
And I have similar feelings about Bronson in this one. Like, he's obviously not an Indian, but, you know, it's Charles Bronson. Who cares? He's so good in it.
Yeah, he can kind of... because he's interesting looking, he sort of pulls it off, even though at the back of your head, yeah, you're always like, no. Also, he's just, like, shredded, and nobody else is.
That was my favorite part.
It's one of the other movies I'd seen him in. I think maybe it was Run of the Arrow. They had some real Native American actors in there and extras. And then Charles Bronson comes out of this teepee, and he just looks like a bodybuilder. Like, nobody else in the movie looks like anything like him. And it's kind of the same thing here.
Yeah.
But you see somebody that... What's up?
There's two other men who appear shirtless in the film, and they...
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, well, they ate well in this era, apparently. You're expecting everybody to be skinny in, you know, the Wild West, because food was scarce. No food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. This is a movie. And then you see Bronson, and you're like, fuck, that's what somebody who does nothing but walk through mountains and rocks and stuff would look like.
Yeah, he's weightlifting.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things. You see him, you're like, that guy looks like he would kill every one of these guys with his bare hands.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's just like this shredded monster of a man. And he's got that death stare. So, I don't know. He's a scary individual. and so, to me, it really works until about 45 minutes in, when you see that, oh, he has a family and stuff. Because I can't imagine this man ever loving. They even, like, have him smiling right into the camera. Oh, that's another thing that happens in the movie I was going to bring up. When the sheriff, at the beginning of the movie, right before he draws on Charles Bronson, he looks right into the camera lens. It's very weird. He kind of gives this evil little look, like, yeah, shit's about to go down. And I'm like, that's just a weird choice. I was like, are we, like, breaking the fourth wall a little bit, Michael Winner? Like, it's so strange. And then I also noticed, just speaking of the filmmaking style, like, the transitions are very interesting.
Yeah.
We do these, like, zoom into somebody's pocket, and then it would just pop out, and it's like, now it's in the saddle of a horse and a whole other scene. It was just there's a whole lot of, like, weird transitions.
Yeah, the first time that happened, I was like, wait, what are we supposed to see? Because usually it zooms in on an element that's supposed to be important, but nope, he's just zooming in.
Yeah, it's very weird, but I kind of dig it. I'm like, all right, Michael Winner's doing something here that's not just rape. All right. Yeah. But I love, there's a scene, and everybody's frustrated in this, you know, early on, and then they come upon, like, this abandoned old Indian, like, camp.
Yeah.
There's all these, like, wigwams or whatever everywhere, and they just start burning them, and they're just hooping and hollering. I love that scene. And that, to me, like, there's similar stuff going on in, like, Platoon, where it's just, they're frustrated because they haven't caught him, so they just take out their violence on nothing, which, you know, again, it reminds you of that great scene in Predator where they all start shooting into the jungle.
Ooh.
You know, and don't hit anything. It's a great scene, but this is like that, where I'm like, this is kind of cool, because it's also, like, scary, because you're like, these guys, they're just fucking monsters, honestly.
Yeah, that was my feeling for that scene. Like, this is the scene where it becomes clear that this isn't actually about justice.
Yes, it's like they really drive it home there, because before that, just the language they're using whenever they're describing Chato.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what's it, one guy says, like, hey, you want to ride with me? He goes, I'll ride anywhere if it means killing an Indian or something like that.
Yes.
Like, Jesus, guys.
Yeah, but they're, like, at the start, they're all operating with a veneer of, no, this is justice. But you can tell they all have ulterior motives or reasons for doing it. And then as it progresses, as it goes on, as they become more desperate, that veneer is disappearing. And Jack Palance, I think you're pronounced. I always thought it was Palance, but...
I never know. I've never known.
I don't either.
Jack Palance, he is sort of the leader, and you can see him losing control of the group as the movie goes on.
Yeah. Well, that's why I brought up the Captain Ahab thing, because he has his own reasons for it. The first time you see him, it's like, what is he doing? He's like laying across his old saddle from the war. He's like hugging it. He's just like laying on it. And, he's
etching something into it or something.
I can't tell, but it's like, that's his life now. He's just, kind of dreaming of his glory days.
And whittling.
Yeah.
Almost.
He's got nothing going on. And so this is his moment. He just jumps on it. Yes, this is going to be as good as going to war.
But you can also still sort of sense that he does have some sense of actual justice.
Yeah, I think that it's that old Southern gentleman archetype. It's still in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Also found out watching that after I watched this, I went reading about it a little bit just to find out a little bit about the, how it was put together, and I found nothing. But I did find out that Jack's real name is Vladimir.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, he's, because his parents were Ukrainian immigrants.
Okay.
Yeah, his real name is Vladimir Polonyuk.
Okay, because I know Charles Bronson's parents are immigrants too, from Lithuania.
Yeah, so that's pretty funny to think about. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, both the lead actors in this are, well, first off, they're kind of the same era, really. They're like that era of Star.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're also, sons of immigrants, and I think they both worked in the mines as younglings.
Mm-hmm.
And both have changed their names to be more Hollywood friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like this old style of Hollywood hardened men from like this time period. They're convincing tough guys as opposed to some actors these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just too bad Bronson never got his courtesy Oscar.
Yeah.
You had to him for Death Wish 3.
Yeah. Well, he could have been in City Slickers, but he decided not to do it.
Aww. Yeah.
Sad face.
Yeah. What exactly kind of turned you off to this, Brandon?
Well, I think the whole thing just peters out for me. Like, yes, I do enjoy the scene where Charles Bronson shoots the sheriff at the beginning. He rides off and the whole posse gets formed, but I don't feel like it ever built up to a satisfying climax for me. I do enjoy some of the violence. There's not really much action here, just as much as there is just like sequences of terrifying violence. But the film just didn't build up to anything for me. Just petered out like the expedition of the characters themselves. Just Charles Bronson picking them off one by one, or them like having horses roll over them, and I didn't find it exciting.
You needed a big boxing brawl finale.
Oh yeah,
in the rain.
Bronson versus Palance. Now, that'd be something to see. Ooh. The two of them fighting it out. We're cheated! I tell you, we're cheated. We could have seen that
thunder and lightning going down between them as they punch each other.
That's what I wanted to see. Instead of just
somebody say, "You and I were not so different after all."
It would have been cliched, but I would have loved it.
Yeah, I was watching this and I was like, "Oh, this is like 12 Angry Men, but frontier justice instead of courtroom justice." Brandon is gonna love this.
Hey, I like 12 Angry Men, but set out in the Wild West, I don't know. I do like the scene where the guy gets shot and face plants on a campfire, though. That's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something we could talk about, is that this movie does seem very violent for the time. You're not seeing a lot of this sort of thing from... Well, is this really that much of an American production? Because I think it looks like it was shot in Spain.
Yeah, it's shot in Spain.
Okay, that makes sense.
But it feels like an American production. So even though a British director shot in Spain, hey, maybe not. I don't know. But it is very violent. And movies were definitely like going that direction at the time. It's pretty hardcore, but yeah, mm-hmm. It's, I don't know.
I love how it got a PG rating.
Well, this is before they had PG-13.
Well, even then.
It's violent. It's cruel and harsh, but it's not like super bloody.
It does have a rape scene or two, but yeah.
you know, it's for the kids. If your parents are there, it's okay.
Yeah, the kids love those scenes.
I guess they're like, eh, it's not really hard R.
Yeah.
It's pretty freaking hard PG, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Kids will be walking out the cinema going, I want a rattlesnake rattler.
That's what they get out of it. Yes, yeah, Charles Bronson.
Why can't Charles Bronson be my dad?
I want him to avenge my mother's rape.
But what is going on in this movie? Like, what is Charles Bronson even doing in the bar at the beginning? It's very strange.
Yeah, well, they say he was in town to get supplies, though. He, also getting a drink. Like, was he
supplies from the bar?
I don't know.
New addition to his homestead.
Has he never been here before? Didn't he know that we were, like, super racists at the bar? I don't know. Jack Palance at some point says he went for supplies, so he probably has a home somewhere. And that's why they keep going. And that's sort of also to explain why he was there. But,
yeah.
No, it needs to happen for the movie to happen.
Yeah. More or less.
Yeah. I can excuse it.
I do think it needed more traps, more obvious, like, you know, spike pits and things like that, like they did in First Blood.
I can see Michael Winner relishing that. But all he gets is like a snake thrown in his face, one guy does. But
well, that is the movie that I was expecting this to be.
Okay.
Like, oh, Charles Bronson just lures some guy into the desert and then picks them off one by one. But it's way more almost like a morality play. Even though they're all bad.
Yeah, Bronson himself never really seems to be necessarily evil. He's more of a force of karma.
Yes.
But I feel like that it gets muddied when you have his family attacked. It changes the dynamic a little bit because you're like, oh, now it's personal. Even the title of the movie is a little bit of a misnomer because it's not really his land outside of his little homestead.
Well, he's familiar with it, and the posse isn't.
Yeah, but they make a point of the point where he runs into this other, like, tribe. It's out there, so I'm like, it's really, like, those guys' land, really, as far as I can understand.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to build up to something. Like, he was going to have them attack the village while the posse is away or something like that, but it never really materialized into anything satisfactory.
At one point, he hooks up with the other dude that gets burned alive.
Oh, okay. But that seems pretty rough.
Oh, but he just lives in the same home somehow.
Yeah, but that, I think that's it. That's as close as it comes to, like, oh, yeah, there's other natives out there, you know. Or maybe it's just showing that he can walk between worlds, even though he can't, because obviously this whole fucking thing got started because he can.
Yeah. Well, also, I think that he runs into the group of Indians early on, so that the audience doesn't wonder, hey, where are all the other Indians?
Well, that could be.
Maybe. Yeah. Even though I don't think I ever wondered that, because it looks like a pretty large, desolate area.
Yeah.
I was never like, man, where are the other people?
This is great.
Probably not out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're smart. They don't live here.
Yeah.
By the way, did you guys recognize the Hooker house? The house where the family Hooker
lives? Yeah. Yeah, which is really funny because I was like, oh, that's the same homestead from Once Upon a Time in the West.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
I recognized it too, but I thought, like, no, it can't be. And then, yeah, no, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out also if the bar was the same bar as from a Franco Nero film I'd seen, but I don't know. Hmm. They all kind of look like that, so it's like, who knows? But that was cool. We just needed Claudia Cardinale to show up.
Oh, yeah, that's always a good thing.
But probably not in a Michael Winner film.
No.
Like, no, you're too good for this. What are you doing?
But kind of circling back to that scene where the guy gets lit on fire alive.
Yeah.
That scene kind of like reignited my fear of being lit on fire because, you know, you kind of take it for granted when you watch a movie. Oh, that guy's on fire. That guy's on fire. That guy's on fire. But that scene looks really brutal when he gets lit on fire. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
It's not like your typical, oh, the guy's clothes are on fire and he's running around and it's semi-comedic. That scene is pretty brutal, and Jack Palance even puts the guy out of his misery by putting a bullet in his head.
Yep, that's where you realize that Palance is actually sympathetic, or at least that's for me, because before that, I...
The most sympathetic.
So, I mean, when he put on his Confederate uniform and he's calling Bronson's character all these kind of weird names and things, and And I was just like, I hate this guy. But then at that point, you're like, oh, well, maybe, you know, he at least has some kind of morality compared to everyone else.
Yeah. He's really the only character in the posse that I really cared about, even though he was an ex-Confederate, which is troubling. But what you gonna do? It's a Michael Winner film.
Well, it's not just troubling. Like, it's weird, right? When he puts on the uniform, and that's the first thing the other guy's like, hey, what's going on? Why are you dressed up in your soldier gear from, like, a decade ago or whatever? And he's just like, I'm going to go hunt this Indian down. You're like, oh, God. And the guy's like, okay.
Yeah.
everyone is kind of like, not, they're like soft addressing it, but they're, you know, you can tell everyone's kind of like, this is strange, right? Like, if somebody just dressed up in, like, military regalia from, you know, a country that doesn't exist anymore, and he's clearly kept this suit all nice and stuff, you're like, that's just, that'd be weird.
He's a little overly enthusiastic. It'd be
like if some guy was, like, a former cop, you know? Like, if I'm trying to, like, if you transplanted this to now, you're like, yeah, this guy was a cop in Canada or something, and he showed up, and he's dressed, like, as a Mountie.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be like, what the fuck is going on? What's this guy's deal? Yeah. Because, yeah, it's that's what it's like, is it's so weird to me. And everyone's just kind of like looking at him going, okay, yeah. And all, like, a few people, like I say, they soft address it. They're like, so you're still into that whole Civil War thing, huh?
Yeah, but some of the other members of the posse are also his war buddies.
Yeah, but they're not dressed like that.
No, they're not dressed like that.
I'm trying to, like, find, you know, any like, analog, you know, or analogy. Maybe if he, like, had played football in high school and he's dressed in, like, he just shows up in the shoulder pads and the, you know, he's got a helmet on.
For what event?
Like, what? Yeah, I know. Exactly. It's just strange, you know? It's like, what the fuck is this guy doing? It's so crazy when you think about it. Because there's a moment in the beginning, too, like, he grabs his jacket off a coat hanger, then he, like, puts it back, and he's like, wait, I'm gonna put on my uniform from when I was young. Like, it's weird. So as sympathetic as he might be, he's also maybe a little bit of a crazy man.
Yeah.
Like, they're all crazy, they all go crazy by the end, but I find that aspect incredibly disturbing. And I kept thinking about it the whole movie, and it's like, yeah, I know this is like only a decade removed, but that's still strange.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure when this film took place exactly. Obviously, it takes place after the American Civil War. That's a given. But, like, they're all using these, like, hammerlock muskets. They're not using, like, your stereotypical Western movie Winchesters.
They're not muskets, but they're, like, they are single shot.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to say 1870s.
Okay. Okay.
I hope not 1880s, because that makes it even weirder.
Yes, it does. But yeah, I was kind of interested because I'm not like a huge firearms guy, but I did notice that. And I was kind of thinking, those aren't your stereotypical Western movie rifles you're seeing right here.
They're more old style for sure. Like, they're big guns. You know, and they all are hammerlock, as you say. But it's like, I think that they went for power. Like, they're maybe like shotguns or something. I don't know. I don't know my old guns. So it's hard for me to say. But yeah, to me, it's still fun. I think it's an interesting, would you say, a morality story, morality play? And it definitely is. And it's fairly simplistic, if you want to look at it that way. But I don't think simple means bad. I think the fact that it's very straightforward made this very enjoyable, easy to follow. Like, you could technically tune out a little bit and come back in. Plus, it's not very long. You know, this is like, what is it, an hour, 40 minutes or something?
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice short little go. And the fact that it peters out, as you say, I kind of like that. I like that it just winds back down and it makes it feel dark. Like, there is no point to this.
Yeah,
they never should have gone after him. Like, the first guy that hassled him at the bar shouldn't have done that. So this is, of course, it's like, no, this is like nihilistic. It's just a mean-spirited little, it's a Michael Winner film, what do you want?
also the more violent Bronson would have gotten, the wronger he would have been. the more wrong.
Yeah.
You know, he can still, like, he shoots the dude in the hand, you know, and it's like, no, this is about punishing them. And if he himself had been, you know, tying somebody by their ankles and burning them alive, that would have, yeah, that would have felt very wrong.
Yeah.
You're like, that's like too much.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, these guys reveal themselves to be the savages.
Yes. Because we should maybe also point out that until they rape his wife, he doesn't kill any of them. He just tries to get them to stop following him by releasing their horses, shooting their horses.
Stabbing their canteens.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only when they make him suffer that he makes them suffer.
Yeah.
They're getting, like, the guy has his horse roll over him and stuff, which, by the way, looks like an accident that they just incorporated into the film.
I thought thought crossed my mind as well, yeah.
Yeah, that, it's like, no, he's making them trip up. Their own folly is their enemy at first.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it still is in a way, but it just is exacerbated considerably when they become more malicious towards him.
And each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Eventually. Well, that's the other thing is, like, they have barely held together their own kind of morality, their own veneer of civilization. Even, like, right away, they're riding, like, the first conversation these guys have, you can tell they don't really like each other all that much.
Yeah.
Like, one guy's just mad that there's even a Mexican there. You're like, oh.
And, of course, it's Earl the Rapist.
Yes. The Michael Winner insert character. He's like, here's somebody here that's not white.
Yeah.
I want to fight him.
Yeah.
Find out if he has a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the first collaboration of six between Michael Winner and Charles Bronson. I think they did three more in the 2 years after this. And then a decade later, Death Wish 2 and 3. I think they work well together.
Yeah.
They're a good matchup. They're both very conservative. That might help. In their political views, I mean.
Yeah, it's hard. I really like this, and I can see why they probably liked working together, because I think that they create a kind of dirty magic, as it were.
Yeah.
But, like, right away, like, right after this, they do The Mechanic, I think. And The Mechanic is absolutely excellent. Another, like, the other thing that's great about these guys is that they just do not shy away from these, like, the darker side of stories. They're very dark movies. All of the ones that they do together are pretty damn dark. Probably The Stone Killer is the lightest, but that's just like this slam bang fantastic actioner.
Mm-hmm. Hot off the heels of Dirty Harry.
Oh yeah, that movie is like, yeah, okay, fucking Dirty Harry came out, we're gonna do this, but way darker. Dirty Harry is also a conservative film, very, like, you know, a reaction to the Manson murders and the Zodiac and stuff, and saying, like, see, these fucking hippies are dangerous. Yeah. you know, it's great. Very in line with the John Milius stuff. But there's nothing keeping them away from the darker elements of any story. They love delving into it. The Mechanic is Le Samurai, where it's like, you know, these hitman films, where the hitman is actually this, he's kind of a social outcast type. And Mechanic is very much in line with that. But I feel like it's meaner and darker than you'd expect. Even, you know, Le Samurai is very dark. But I think the Mechanic just goes there, goes way deeper into that.
Then you get Death Wish, Death Wish 2, Death Wish 3. Death Wish 3, that's pretty goofy. Maybe intentionally, but that's one of my favorite films.
Yeah, but Death Wish 2 is like it. By that point, it's the 80s, a little different reality going on, and it revels in the violence a lot more. Whereas Death Wish, it feels like, the end of that movie, it's like to survive hell, you got to become hell, that kind of thing. Yeah. And so the end of that movie, it's like, it's pretty fucking twisted, where he's just seeing people being loud at the airport at the end, and he's looking at them like, I'm going to kill you just for being annoying.
Yeah.
Like, he's so far gone at the end of that movie.
Yeah.
The Stone Killer does play a little bit in that playground of, like, it's again, like, look at how the hippie culture is fucking everything up. And the only thing keeping the world from ending is, like, another evil cop, but he's the evil on your side. He's the evil on the side of Law and Order.
You gotta play dirty.
Yeah. And he says, like, he even has, like, a line at the end of the minute. He's like, you got 60 seconds, America, or something like that. And it's just like this, like, turn, you know, he chastises the country for allowing crime, so to speak. Your damn liberal policies are ruining this world. And Death Wish 2 is, of course, just like really gross, way grosser version of Death Wish.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of appreciate Michael Winner in a way, because he, again, he's just like unafraid to be as fucking nasty as possible.
Yeah, and he's good at manipulating an audience.
Yeah, because he takes something, specifically rape usually, and just is like, no, he like torments the audience with it. And I don't know if there's anybody else that quite does it the way he does it. You know, there are entire genres, the rape revenge genre, that are, you know, usually it's a woman scorned that goes on a killing rampage because of it. But
yeah. And it came to popularity around the same time as the first Death Wish movie.
Yeah, but it does feel cheap, for sure.
Yeah.
But he does not, like, mind getting as salacious as he can with it. So I do sort of appreciate it, but, you know, the guy is definitely a sleazeball. I've seen it. I think I brought it up before, you know, that interview where he's talking to the lady and he's just like, oh, you know, how would you know? Have you ever been raped or something like that? I can't remember how he puts it, but it's just like horrible. You're like, Jesus Christ, man, why would you invite that into the conversation?
Yeah. Also, when he died, they found out that he had two women that he was paying just their bills and what do you call it? Living expenses and accommodation.
Oh, like a secret mistresses?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that seems exactly what I would expect from him. Even though there's that part of me that's just surprised that women want anything to do with him.
Oh.
Well, I guess if you got the money. Yeah, he just seems like, why would you want anything to do with that guy?
Charles Bronson, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
Well, as long as you don't say no when he asks for sex, I think you're good.
Yeah.
Do you want to have sex? Yes. Oh, never mind then.
Michael Winner in a nutshell.
Oh, jeez. I don't know what more can be said other than I'm kind of surprised you didn't appreciate this more, but maybe not. You know, maybe the vibes are just all wrong, because I think that Michael Winner can be off-putting. His movies, not a single one of them is like happy. none of them end like in a fucking luxurious like love story. They all end pretty fucking mean. That's just what he wants to do. He wants the audience to leave and go, ugh.
Yeah, it took
calm
me
down, dear. It's just a movie.
you need to walk out and be a little depressed and thinking about your life a little bit.
Unless it's Death Wish 3. That movie just makes me so happy for some reason. Yeah. That movie just brings me so much joy and makes me want to live every day to its fullest and shoot people with rocket launchers.
Well, it's so funny. That movie has one of my favorite Charles Bronson moments, because I usually don't like happy Bronson, because that seems weird to me. There's a part where he sets up the trap and basically a 2x4 comes up and slaps people in the face when they try and break in through a window. A little Home Alone trap.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks up and they're like, oh, there's something on the board. And they're like, what is it? And he's like, he smiles. He's so happy. He's like, teeth.
I love it. It feels like something out of a sitcom, but it's like Michael Winner. If Michael Winner directed a sitcom, it'd be Death Wish 3.
I'm going to put a laugh track to the violence in that.
Yeah. Because like all like the families that are like living in the apartment building, like, this used to be a nice neighborhood until the gang showed up. And then like Charles Bronson just like happily dispatches all of them with his like 25-foot long pistol. And it's just, it's nuts, but I love it.
Oh yeah, it's great.
You know what's funny? I think that movie is a very sarcastic film in a lot of ways. I think that movie is Michael Winner basically saying, oh, this is the movie that you all pretended that the first two were. He's like, everyone, oh, it's just him killing a million people. And you're like, okay, you want to see what that looks like? That part where he comes out and he has the big old Browning, you know, 30 millimeter machine gun and just starts mowing down bikers. And then, like, the gun is so big, he's got to have the other dude next to him holding the bullet chain.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're like, that is an amazing moment in film history. Because you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, when he gets the big old Wilding pistol, and it's just like, oh, this is bigger than anything Dirty Harry ever had. Here you go. It's just like, blam, blam. The only thing better would have been if their heads were exploding, like Dawn of the Dead style. Just like... Because it's incredible. And I feel like that movie, it feels lighthearted because it's like the joy of exuberance, you know. He's really just going, fuck you guys. You want to see machine guns and guns and guns and guns and guns, killing and killing and killing? Yeah, here it is. And like the when he's running around with the Ed Lauder.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, thanks, dude, or whatever he's saying, you know.
It all feels like a self-parody.
Yeah, he's totally just being like, this is, you know, a middle finger to the critics.
Yes. It does remind me of Commando in a way. They both came out the same year. They kind of have that kind of, like, campy feeling where it's almost like the directors are in on the joke as they, like, make it as ridiculous as possible.
Well, Commando definitely is. Mark Lester definitely knows what he's doing as far as, like, that tongue-in-cheek thing. And I think that you could probably say a similar thing, but I think it's a little more mean, a little more mean-spirited.
Mm-hmm.
Just like slapping you in the face with it. That's what Michael Winner's doing. Whereas Commando's like, isn't this funny? Like, it's goofy, right? We all agree this is goofy, but it is fun to watch.
Yes.
Whereas Michael Winner's like, fuck you. Here's your violence. Here's your teeth on a board. Yeah. But the ending is just, that's the most ridiculous thing. Like, Commando should have thought of that, you know, using the rocket launcher up close.
Yes.
You know, the other movie that came out the year did the same thing. What's Invasion USA? Oh, Chuck Norris did that.
That's right. The
same thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh. It's another good one.
Blows Richard Lentz, the mannequin doll, right out the window.
That was quite a year for action movies.
Oh, yeah. 85 is great. 85 is really like... Like 84, to me, like 84 is like the real start of the 80s, and like as we know it, because people say 80s, but I think when they say that, they mean like about 84 to 94, because that people will say Steven Seagal and Van Damme, they're 80s action stars. I'm like, they made like one movie in the 80s that you guys can name probably. They're really like 90s stars, but not really the beginning of the 90s. So, yeah, like, okay, that kind of includes that. But 85, by that point, they're like, oh, now we understand what we need to be 80s. You know, you look at, like, Back to the Future and stuff, these, like, oh, this is solidly 80s. Whereas 84, it's like, there's still, like, you can just feel what's left of the 70s still a little bit, even in something like Ghostbusters, which is a very 80s movie, and Gremlins and things. You're like, but there's, like, a touch of something. There's a little bit of grime left from the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like
Chateau's Land, which is a period piece, still, to me, feels very 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Pure 70s. So,
yeah. And even especially, you know, we brought up the Death Wish 3, and I'm like, yeah, it's clearly a different era, but it still, like, contains that a lot of that grime there from the 70s.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just the Michael Winner effect. I don't know.
Death Wish 3?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was like a prime 80s movie.
Yeah, I guess. I think Death Wish 4 is more of an 80s movie. I mean, he's got the leather jacket and, you know, it's just like, okay, now it's the 80s. There's neon colors and arcades and shit like that. Roller rinks. Mm-hmm. Like, that feels very 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Although, like, the hellscape that everyone just, like, still lives in Death Wish 3 is really funny to me. when they're firebombing this little area and stuff, I'm like, yeah, it probably needed to be renovated anyways. Because place looks like shit. There's so much urban decay still, which is, you know, that's like a prime vista for the first two Death Wish movies, so it like carries over into three. Whereas in four, it's like, yeah, now we got like this, you know, these 80s things like cocaine and these drug cartel elements.
Yeah, it's like Charles Bronson busted into Scarface.
Yeah, again, then that's like even earlier 80s, but it definitely like foretells the way that the decade is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you could say the same with like First Blood, which has none of those elements, but it, you're like, eh, it's not quite 70s, but it sort of feels that way. The music is very 70s, but it definitely goes into something that is not 70s. It feels very 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brendan, do you want to shoehorn Halloween Resurrection into the conversation somehow?
Okay, let's see if I can do this.
You don't have to.
Okay. Well,
say, just say trick or treat, motherfucker.
Busta Rhymes is almost cast in the Jack Palance role. No.
Yeah.
Nah, I can't do it.
I love it.
But okay, cool. I still love Halloween Resurrection, though. Oh, I got it. Halloween Resurrection is the Halloween series, but Death Wish 3 is the Death Wish 3 series. Is that close enough?
Mm. Sure.
I do not follow.
Okay.
I think Death Wish 5 is like the Halloween Resurrection.
Oh, I like that one too. But yeah.
Oh, I call it that because I hate that one.
You don't like the exploding soccer ball that cures the guy's dandruff?
I like the, I was making a sandwich. No, I like that. I like
that's Death Wish 4.
Charles Bronson's doing. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Shit. Why can't that's I why you like anything? It. Yeah. Why can't I remember anything Death Wish 5 other than a bad Danny Trejo mannequin?
That's Death Wish 5. That's what Death Wish 4.
It is.
Yeah.
Man, I guess I don't remember anything from Death Wish 5.
It's the clothing factory one where a guy gets like shoved into a meat grinder that's in a clothing factory, and there's like the guy who falls into the pool of acid that's also in a clothing factory.
Nope.
Oh, no memory. No memories. Need to rewatch it. It's great stuff.
I think I remember him jogging and wearing sweats at one point.
I don't remember that exactly.
I was like, oh, Charles Bronson's still in shape.
He was still jacked though, maybe. But yeah.
I always thought he deteriorated very fast after Jill Ireland passed away.
Oh,
yeah.
And I watched the Family of Cops movies and stuff with him, which I think are the last things he did. That was actually like the first thing that I ever watched of Charles Bronson.
Oh, great introduction. Oh.
Yeah. To the point where I think when I finally watched, like the next thing I ever watched of his was like Veal Rides. And I was like, oh, that's the guy from Family Cops. Yeah. I don't have any Halloween connections myself. So it's all you, Brandon.
I got nothing.
So follow the podcast. Check out the website, alloutofbubblegum.com. Check out the Patreon. Join the Discord. And hopefully we'll see you next time.
Yeah. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
And people said to me, how do you on with Bronson? I said, well, Carlos, I don't know. I mean, I spent a lot of time and I liked him, but I didn't necessarily get the feeling he was mad about me. And literally a very few weeks after that movie finished, I got a phone call. It was then from Columbia, saying we're making a film called The Mechanic and Charlie Bronson insists you come to Hollywood and direct it. The film switched to United Artists. I directed it. And from that moment on, we were genuinely very close until he sadly died. And the last many years of his life, he had Alzheimer's, so he didn't know anybody.